Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at EPLRoundtable@gmail.com. All right, well, if you're wondering why you're hearing from us again so soon after our Sunday show, it's because we have both updates about the European Super League and also Tottenham have sacked Jose Mourinho. To help me talk about both things, we're joined by Steve McGookin, who frequents the show somewhat regularly and also used to be the chairman of New York Spurs, the Spurs supporters group in New York City. Steve, an absolute pleasure chatting to you as always. Maybe not under the best of circumstances this time, though. The Jose Mourinho era has indeed ended at Tottenham. He kept claiming that he's never left a club without winning a trophy and Tottenham wouldn't be his first, but in fact, he leaves just 6 days before the next opportunity Tottenham would have had.
Yes, absolutely, Kevin. Thanks very much for having me on. What a bizarre day. It really has been. The irony, of course, is that a week ago we were all caught up with a shaggy dog and Dulux's social media account.
Was that only a week ago?
It's only a week ago, and now we're talking about basically the world of football imploding on itself in so many ways. But yeah, it's good to be back on with you, and I'm looking forward to our chat. I mean, Spurs certainly picked a good day to bury the bad news, and of course, you know, the irony being that they hired a manager to win trophies, as you say, and then sacking him in the week of a cup final. It's actually hilarious, but it's completely in keeping with the pantomime that has been our season this year. Seriously, apparently Daniel Levy made the decision after the Everton game on Friday night, and we really needed to win one of those two games, the Man United game or the Everton game, in order to be in with a realistic chance, I think, of challenging for the top four. And that was those two games, I think, in microcosm summed up our season. And there's absolutely no doubt that the season was characterized by a consistent underachievement. It was the way in which we were feeling. There was a pattern to how we were feeling. So, I do agree with the decision. I'm just sad it came to it, because I certainly think that Mourinho has been one of the best managers that the Premier League has ever seen, just not with us. But it was increasingly clear. I mean, you'll realize that, you know, the situation had become untenable. Even though, you know, a lot of Spurs fans, myself included, and we've talked about this actually, thought that he would probably end up seeing out his contract simply because, it would have been too difficult or too expensive to go down this path. And I know we're going to come on to talk about it in a minute, but I just wonder how much the discussion about the promised revenues from the Super League factored into that decision, where it suddenly got to the stage where money really wasn't the prime consideration. Daniel Levy is, as you know, is nothing if not a student of business timing. And he's probably figuring that just as he swooped to get Mourinho in the first place, that this decision, this move will prove to be, you know, another masterstroke, even if it requires him in the short term to accept that his judgment was clouded by his pursuit of Jose. But I'd like to hear what you think as well. But I don't think there's any doubt that we've certainly gone backwards from where we are with where we were with Pochettino, and now we're facing, you know, yet another reset under Levy's ownership.
Yeah, I think everything you say there makes a lot of sense, and it's quite right. It is worth noting that the slide did happen under Pochettino, I think a lot of people remember the 2019 campaign as the one that brought us to a Champions League final, but forget that we were listing heavily in the league towards the end of that season. And then obviously started the year so poorly under Pochettino that he ended up getting sacked. So I do just want to avoid any Pochettino revisionism towards the end. At his height, us places we never dreamed of really going. But towards the end, it wasn't that great. And so I think the overall trajectory for Mourinho was pointed downwards from the get-go, and he didn't do enough to reverse that. They had the push after the pause of the pandemic to get into the Europa League. We saw how heavily they celebrated. That was the only thing we could get into at that point. And obviously, was it a loss or a draw against Sheffield United, like right after the restart? Yeah, and it basically knocked us out of any contention for top four last season. And then, as you say, we had to win any really of the last three or four. I think at this point we're 18th in the form table. Probably not good enough when you have to win them to secure one of those top four spots. Although, do top four spots even matter? We'll talk about that more a little bit later, as Steve alluded to. But I do wonder if the ESL stuff has led to this decision, because if Jose Mourinho's clause, which we heard was 30 million, was halved if we didn't make Champions League, and now we intentionally have chosen to not be in the Champions League next year, even though we probably wouldn't have qualified, did that allow them to trigger the 15 million buyout instead of the 30 million? Because we've already seen some reports today that it was 16. So if it's like 15 plus like a little added on change or something. That could be what happened, not to overly speculate. But as for Mourinho's time as the actual manager, obviously started brightly. We scored loads of goals. I think West Ham and Burnley were two of the first few that we scored goals and then conceded a fair few. Actually, I think Burnley was 5-0, but the West Ham, I think, was 3-2 or 4-3 or something crazy like that. Dele obviously started on an incredibly hot streak under Mourinho. We were so excited for him to be kind of the 1B to Kane's 1A. And then as we talked about early in the season, you and I did, that as soon as that became Son, Dele just fell out of the picking order entirely. And you have to be wondering which players this will end up affecting. But as for Mourinho's tenure, I mean, it has to be viewed as a failure, unless you're just talking about the appearances of being elite. And I made this point on the show yesterday, so I'm not going to delve into it too much. But I think that Daniel Levy's version of success is what has just happened with the European Super League. It was building the training ground to have the appearance of being an elite club, building the stadium to have the appearance of being an elite club, not signing a naming rights deal, which I'm sure will be worth more money in this Super League because we're in this elite group, signing Jose Mourinho, an elite manager, to look like an elite club, bringing back Gareth Bale to kind of show that we can still draw the big names, even though he might be on the decline of his own career. And I think that was the point, was getting us all to have the appearance of being elite until we were selected into this elite group. And then as soon as we did that, it kind of feels like he didn't need Mourinho anymore. The fans had already turned. We're hearing reports that especially the French section of the dressing room had already fallen out with Mourinho. And then it was just kind of spreading and the defenders got quieter and quieter in the dressing room. So he already got us signed up for this new thing. It's a 23-year contract with the European Super League, if it does end up actually happening, which who knows. But unless you're thinking of the appearance of being an elite club, the hiring of Jose Mourinho was a failure. And it's not because we let go of Poch. We were struggling under Poch when we let Poch go. But it was an attempt to capitalize on the aging talent already at the club before we had to start a new cycle, and it didn't work. He had opportunities, obviously, in all of the competitions each year, getting knocked out by Norwich last year in the FA Cup when that was our last chance there after being knocked out in the Champions League to Leipzig. I think that all happened in like a 2 or 3 week stretch while Kane was injured, if memory serves. Then, obviously, this year, we're in the Carabao Cup final, but got knocked out of the FA Cup in that weird, crazy match against Everton. Got knocked out of the Europa League, which just, I think, was the ending point for a lot of people that were kind of in the neutral, not in the Jose in or Jose out camp, but the people that were just kind of in the middle were like, oh, if he isn't going to keep us going in that, then obviously all these losses knocked us out of any likely chance of finishing in the top four. Again, will that matter? Time will tell. But it just has to be a failure, right?
Yeah, I think everything you said there is exactly right. And the conspiracy theorist in me would ascribe those motivations to someone who thinks 5 years ahead. But I think what Levy's motivation is and what was driving him certainly was this concept of us being seen as an elite club, as among one of Europe's elite. The stadium is the personification of that. And as you say, his judgment, or as I said, I think his judgment was clouded by his desire to get Mourinho. He'd obviously,
which lasted, you know, 20 years.
He'd wanted him for years. Absolutely. And then I'm not saying, and you're right, the revisionism, there's no place for revisionism, but I'm not saying that it wasn't right to lose Pochettino. I'm just saying that obviously we haven't progressed in the way that you would have expected us to do. I think there is also a realization that Mourinho is not the manager that he was, and also that the game is not the game under which Mourinho had his greatest successes. And just trying to replicate some of those strategic aspects probably wasn't going to work. So, we are where we are. I think we've trod water during the Mourinho period. It was incredibly disappointing. I mean, the 6-1 at Old Trafford, that was obviously the high point, and it was always going to be downhill from there, no matter what we did. And as you as well pointed out, I think the low point for all of us was probably the collapse against Zagreb. But there were a lot of frustrating performances this year. And, you know, truth be told, in the league, 3 points is 3 points. It doesn't matter who you get them from. And we just left ourselves, coming into this sort of final run of the season, we just left ourselves too few games against teams that we should have been able to dominate. And we weren't able to do that. So, I think the point you made about losing, not losing the dressing room, but losing elements of the dressing room, is certainly very important, because that's all you need to lose, really. I think there's a collective responsibility. The players bear responsibility. Daniel bears responsibility, but you know, Mourinho bears a responsibility for finding himself out on the street today. And who knows whether he'll manage again? It remains to be seen. So, I think two big backward steps over the last couple of years. Mm. Certainly not anything to be excited about, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I'm sure you saw last week they posted the highlights of the Manchester City match, the quarterfinal for the Champions League. It just felt like a further hammering of the nail of how far we'd fallen in just 2 years.
Absolutely. Just in terms of personal belief as well. I mean, now
and feeling like part of the club, which the fans got to feel under Pochettino, and it never felt like that under Mourinho.
Absolutely. I mean, that was the thing with Pochettino. When we went on the pitch, you thought we were going to win. And even when we didn't, you know, you knew why we didn't. We could analyze the game afterwards. But now with Mourinho, you get the sense, you know, how many of us have watched a game on TV and we've taken the lead and we've gone, oh my God, that's too early. You know, we're just going to try and sit now for 60 minutes. So it's just a different mindset about what your expectations are for success, and our lack of consistency across this season, I think, has been the most disappointing thing. But
yeah, as you said about Mourinho's future, we're unsure if he'll coach again. He was kind of ambushed by Sky Sports at his home as he was unpacking after he got home from being sacked. He said, "You know me, you know I'm not going to say anything. No need for breaks and recharging my batteries. I'm always in football." So certainly seems to think he's getting another job sometime soon. I saw somebody already mention the Bayern Munich job. I can't imagine he will get a job at a club bigger than Tottenham next.
Right.
But, you know, well, we'll see.
That's not to blow our trumpet. It's just basically to say, well, you know, what have you done for me lately?
Very much so. And you mentioned that his peak was in a different era. And I was talking to my fiance about this, about he always was a huge proponent of negative reinforcement, of if I tell you you're not able to do something, you'll come back and be like, oh, screw you. Yes, I can. And I think with a new generation of players and during a pandemic, when there's so much negativity and everything like that already in the world, all the racial injustice stuff, not to get too far into it, but we're in a very negative time. And I don't think a manager trying to apply negative tactics on the pitch, but negative psychological tactics is something that would work with this generation anyway. But in this time, trying to like tell people they're not good enough and expecting them to respond as opposed to just get further down because of everything else in the world, I think is one of the reasons that he isn't the manager of Tottenham anymore.
Yeah. And I think in terms of his personal career and his personal stock, there's a cumulative effect now where what has happened over the past year and a bit with us has diluted his previous abilities and his previous ability to walk into a dressing room and command respect. Again, it comes back to this, you know, what have you done for me lately concept. And especially with players, as you say, players need the arm around the shoulder more than they need the stick or they need the carrot.
Yeah, there's a reason Poch and Redknapp were our two most recent successful managers, and it wasn't AVB or Mourinho.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Question as we kind of transition away from the Mourinho era here. Like I said in the open, he kept saying that Tottenham wouldn't be the first club that he leaves without winning a trophy. He obviously does leave without winning a trophy. Do you have any regret that Tottenham were the ones that didn't benefit from his seeming Midas touch when it comes to trophies? Or do you agree that everything was just so untenable that we probably wouldn't have won it with him anyway?
I also think the squad that he had probably would not have won the Europa League this year, given the other teams that were into the sort of final stages of it. But I was just overwhelmingly disappointed by the way we went out of that tournament. That summed up where I think we were and the indecision and the lack of confidence in ourselves, I think, that pervaded that whole performance against Zagreb. Yes, obviously disappointed that we didn't win a trophy. I think in a way also, just to come back to the point about the timing of the announcement, it would have been harder to go through with this if he had won the Carabao Cup, even though, you know, and I have a soft spot for the Carabao Cup. But it's not what you would call a premier trophy, especially now in the context of, you know, talking about the potential of the Super League. But it's, you know, it's something that that we can hang our put the ribbons on and hang our achievement on for a season, and we weren't able to get to that stage. I mean, as I say, you know, I do have an attachment to the League Cup because to digress for a second, I 1999 I took my son to Wembley for the first time, and Alan Neilson scored just down in front of us, actually, although we were in like the third row, so we're down at pitch level, so not a great view when you're 8 years old. So Tom didn't really see much of the action that day, but it was a great day, and it would have been awful to have lost a game like that. And then in 2008, I was at Floyd's, a place you know well, on Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. We managed to, you know, get one over on Chelsea, and it felt like there was a real sort of sense of, well, let's use this as a stepping stone to move forward. And it, you know, it's hard to believe that was so completely misguided even back then. It's hard to believe that was the last time we lifted a trophy. I mean, God bless you, Juan de Ramos. But I mean, you know, the interesting thing, looking ahead to Sunday, I mean, you know, as we are, someone tweeted the other day that they said it's Tottenham Hotspur FC that's playing in the final, not Jose Mourinho FC.
And no, it's really not.
I mean, at the end of the day, it sort of brings everything back to your allegiance. Your allegiance is to the club, not to the manager, or not actually even to any of the individual players, because, you know, at the end of the day, every player should be upgradable. So, you know, and that's something, you know, that is still to unfold over the next few weeks and months. But you know, just for a season that promised so much, the idea that you know that we can actually build on this guy's reputation and promise and reputation for being a winner, that there was that potential there, and now we have such a gloomy prospect ahead. I think even a win on Sunday is going to feel like an underachievement, and I'll be honest, I don't even think we'll manage that, to be fair, because I think, you know, City are head and shoulders the best team in the country at the moment, and I think their slip up against Chelsea the other day in the FA Cup was just that. I think it was a blip.
And although, it's worse that we're the other side of that, because that slip could have been us, but instead they've already done it.
Well, that's true. I mean, it's very rare for a good team to go into a dip like that twice in a row. But you have to say fair play to Thomas Tuchel and the way he's organized his team. I mean, if you get the defense right, it lets everyone else play with a bit of confidence, and that's I think what we have been missing. There's been no confidence on the field, and as I say, I think there's a shared responsibility in that outcome.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, I can't say I'm too optimistic. The new manager bounce has pretty categorically been proven to not really happen. If anything, it's one result the second match in, which technically we have Southampton midweek. So, you know, yeah, Ryan Mason's blue and white army and all that.
Good for Ryan. I think, you know, given what he threw, it's fantastic that he's actually getting a chance to show what he can do.
I agree. And if we somehow won, somebody has to make a movie about that. I mean, he nearly died on a pitch, then came back to Tottenham to get all of his coaching badges done, ended up in the youth system here, and is now taking over. Why it's not Ledley, still not entirely sure. Even weeks ago, it seemed pretty clear that it would be Mason that would take over in an interim role if it happened. So, but for him, what a dream.
It sets up the next season of Ted Lasso pretty well, though, doesn't it?
I did see somebody ask where he was on the betting odds list. Where's Ted Lasso? Yeah,
but again, you know, it does prompt the question, you know, who would we get? Who could we get? Mm. You know, the talk about Nagelsmann, a great manager, but you have to ask, why would he come? But then, you know, in this current situation, I know we're going to go on to talk about the Super League, but if that actually goes ahead, then there's going to be an awful lot of managers, agents, and players who decide whether the trade-off with tying their kite to a particular team is going to be worth it, is going to be lucrative enough for them. So it really is, as I say, the Super League thing has sort of thrown all the cards up in the air at the moment, and we're not really sure what's going to happen when they all land. The only thing we know for sure is that we won't have our Joker.
Yeah, and like you said, we don't know where any of those cards will land. If they manage to make nice the European Super League with UEFA and or FIFA, things, I think, settle down tremendously. But currently, there are just threats flying all over the place about players in the Super League not being eligible to play in the World Cup or the Euros. This league wouldn't start until August, so I think this Euros would be safe. Unless I'm missing something. To your point, like, players will want in because of the amount of money involved. Players will want out because of national team involvement. Same with managers. I agree with you on the short list of managers. Probably Nagelsmann and Allegri are probably two of the ones higher up the list. At the moment, I saw Jurgen Klinsmann as a betting favorite, but I think that's just due to his past connections with Tottenham. But yeah, I don't really see... a clear one, because it seems like Nagelsmann will just take Hansi Flick's job at Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
So then what happens after that? It seems like Sarri is a no-go. I would actually love, you talked about after Pochettino losses, we could sit down and debate like what happened and tactically what didn't work, team selection, stuff like that. Sarri would be very fun to cover, but it sounds like that's not going to happen either. Is it for you just like me, like we want it to be Nagelsmann, but it probably won't happen?
I don't know. That's the thing. I mean, I here's who I want it to be. I want it to be Scott Parker 5 years from now, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, we talked about it on the show yesterday, yeah. Although Russ did not recommend him if we were tired of the defensive Mourinho football.
I know. I mean, I think maybe a double act of Scott Parker and Chris Hughton might do the job for us in an interim basis or in a short-term basis. But I really admire the way in which he has sort of knuckled down and the passion that he has brought to that, the role that he has at Fulham. And I suspect if they do go down, which unfortunately is starting to look likely now, that they will keep him on and let him have a chance to bounce back again. So good luck to Scotty. And I really do think if he continues to learn and absorb the lessons that he's getting both from the Premier League and from getting into the Premier League, then I think he'll be a fine contender down the road. But yeah. As you say, it's, you know, who do we get to? I mean, I hope they'll let Ryan Mason lead the team out at Wembley. I think they'll do that. They have to make a decision on who's available, who's available that won't be available at the end of the season. There are so many unknowns really just at the moment in managerial stakes that you wouldn't want to put a lot of money on someone specific.
Yeah. Also, because we're recording this pretty close to the time that it was officially announced, more news continues to come through. David Orenstein and a couple of other people have written a piece for The Athletic that has bullet point reasons that he was sacked and what was happening within the club. So I'll just run through them quickly and just get your quick take before we move on. The Athletic reveals Tottenham players were left bored and untested by his training sessions. Very similar to what we heard on Pochettino's way out, by the way. Most of the squad were expecting his sacking today after it was postponed. Tactics were so obsessed with stopping opposition players that players were unsure how to attack themselves. Mourinho's assistant Joe Sacramento was unpopular within the squad. The club were unhappy with Mourinho's criticism of the players and asked him to stop it. Mourinho ran out allies of the club, both on and off the pitch. At the end, only Harry Kane was still loyal to Mourinho. His dismissal had nothing to do with Super League, as was reported by some this morning, and was based purely on results. So to my eye, the big things are the players complaining about not feeling tested in the training sessions, which, like I said, they said about Mourinho. The interesting thing there about Joao Sacramento being unpopular, he was supposed to be kind of this computer whiz kid that was supposed to be the youth side to Mourinho's experience side. The fact that the players multiple times asked him to stop criticizing them publicly and that in the end it was only Kane that was left.
I wonder if Harry's own personal ambitions and plans have factored into the conversation as well. I don't know. That's the other thing is, you know, I hope he'll stay, but you wouldn't really blame him, to be honest with you.
You can't expect him to stay for another cycle.
No.
I'd love it if he did, though. But yeah, this actually makes me worry about that more. Because you'd have to imagine under Pochettino, we were growing something naturally, and we all thought that, you know, we were, for multiple years, people said we were the best team in the league. The year that Leicester won the title and the year that Chelsea won the title, we'd have guests on the show and continually say that we were the best team they played that season.
We certainly played the best football, absolutely.
Exactly, but it didn't end up amounting to anything. So then you bring in Mourinho, and so Mourinho sits down Kane, as we saw in the documentary, and is like, I will turn you into a superstar. And this season is pretty solid testament to that. So I think Kane saw his own ascendancy and Tottenham's under Mourinho. I think they both are very competitive and driven. You and I talked about on a previous show that I don't think Kane was one of the people that would shrink when, you know, addressed aggressively or negatively, because he's freaking Harry mm-hmm. Kane. Like, he's not going to lose his spot just because of a few missed chances, the way a few errors at the back was costing center backs months of match time at a time. So I'm now more worried that maybe he thought Pochettino was the answer to him finding success. He thought Mourinho was the answer to finding him success. Is there anybody else that can come down, that can come in and prove to Harry Kane that he will win him something at Tottenham? I don't think you can. Both because I don't think the club's at that place anymore, and because Mourinho is like the winner. Short of Guardiola or Zidane rocking up, there's not anybody that can as successfully throw medals on the table and say, listen to me. And I think in the end, that's what Kane was still listening to when nobody else was.
Yes, no, I totally agree with all of that. I think that's exactly right. And again, we were talking about the carrot and the stick approach and putting your arm around somebody. And Mourinho probably did put his arm around Harry, and Harry was the player who least needed it. You know what I mean. So yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And so we get to a situation where again we're speculating about Harry's future and whether he'll stay, whether he'll go, where would he go? And again, those questions are going to be up in the air until this situation with the Super League is resolved. Because there's always, for a player like Harry, there's always going to be a limited universe of clubs where he could actually go. And you know, all the Super League does is just reinforce that sense of uniqueness, of limited opportunities for him, limited avenues.
Yeah, and I do think it's an interesting one, because this whole time I've been saying, regardless of whether or not he wants to go, who has the money to do it? But 12 clubs just got 320 plus million euros day one. So if you're wondering where the money to sack Mourinho came from, probably there.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, can those mega clubs actually afford him? Well, I guess only time will tell.
Somebody asked me the other day, they said, you know, if Kane does leave at the end of the season, what do you think he'll go for? And my response was, and this is obviously before the Super League talk started, my response was, in this current market, probably half of what Levy wants for him. And so in a way, I think the market, the internal market for players and managers as well, I think has been thrown into confusion by this. So there has to be, as you were saying, the point you were making, I think, about the Euros coming up. I mean, that the national representation thing be something that's going to have to be sorted out very quickly. But yes, I think that there has to be a resolution to this very quickly, I think, because I can't remember anything like the concerted, widespread condemnation from fans groups, and especially those of the clubs involved who would actually benefit from this, you know. And did you see Neville's interview the other night?
It was very strongly worded.
It was, but you know, actually, it was pretty spot on, it has to be said, and it largely sums up a lot of the reaction from very ordinary fans. And again, also, I think it puts the managers of the existing club, the 12 clubs, it puts them in a kind of a strange position. I mean, obviously, you have one less to worry about this morning, but it's interesting that, I mean, Klopp, for example, he's already on the record from a couple of years ago as saying that he's against the idea of a Super League, because in effect that the Champions League had already become a Super League. So it's going to be interesting to see if there's conflict between managers and their clubs as this goes forward. And you know, as you know, Kev, I mean, the concept, the idea of the Super League has been floating around for years in different forms, but the timing now seems particularly cynical. You know, it took a pandemic for owners to realize that they didn't actually need fans in the seats in order to make money, and to make a lot of money as well. And I think, going back to what you were saying, I mean, the structure, how the explanations that they've given for the structure and how it's going to work, that's actually less important right now than just the threat. And the threat is going to have to be resolved before we can move on to something else. So, as you say, there's a big body of belief that says that this is it's a power play. It's trying to leverage the changes in the way in which the Champions League is structured and the way in which the revenues are shared out from that. And I think maybe down the road we might end up seeing some sort of agreement, but the clubs at least know that they have that power in their back pocket, you know?
Mm. Yeah, it's definitely interesting that it's happened now. I think the sad thing that has come out of this is they're coming out of a year with, as you say, no fans and also with no money after the financial impact of all of this. And when given the choice between which thing do we want to recover, everybody right. unanimously said money. At the time when these clubs were dented slightly financially, their solution was the first thing that offers me the biggest check I'm going to agree to. And then they all agreed to it unanimously. Well, in England anyway.
Right.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
The sense of suffering, the sense of being dented, it's all relative. Really, isn't it? I mean, there's certainly in the playing terms, there was a sense of detachment from in that relationship between the clubs and the fans since the lockdown started. And, you know, I know you and I have spoken before about the loss of home field advantage, but I think there is that sort of realization that part of the game, that part of the relationship between the team and the fans wasn't as crucial as a lot of people believed it to be. So I think, and I'd love to hear what you think about this, but for me, it doesn't take a big leap to sort of imagine that if the breakaway was to go ahead, pretty soon there wouldn't be games in London or Manchester or Milan at all, but they'd be in Beijing or Dubai or New York probably. And you know, they might as well be esports teams playing FIFA, you know?
Yeah, Jamie and I talked about that a little bit on the show yesterday and then continued on Twitter, but is this not the ultimate realization of what the ICC was attempting? For those that don't know, the International Champions Cup, where you just drag the biggest clubs everywhere all over the summer to play each other exclusively. They're automatically selected. It has nothing to do with merit or anything like that. Just who's going to get the most turnout? Who are the biggest names? I know people often scoff at Tottenham being there, but Tottenham are the 10th most profitable club in the world right now. For anybody still wondering why Tottenham are involved.
I was just going to say, the thing with the ICC was that it was never envisaged as anything other than exhibition games. It was never, you know, going to run alongside competitive domestic competitions. So that, in a sense, is – and this is where I'm with Klopp. I mean, the Champions League had already evolved – into a Super League.
Today did nothing to dissuade that opinion.
No, I mean, for me, it's just a greed-driven power play, basically. And the interesting thing is, no matter how it resolves itself now, it's going to be really hard for the clubs to walk this back, because if it doesn't happen, that the damage to their reputation's already been done. But
yeah, they've already made official announcements and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked the conspiracy theory that this was all just the power play to get what they wanted, which it seems like the Champions League was doing anyway. Although if you read into some of the financial ramifications of some of the Super League stuff, it gets nefarious really quickly. Basically, if any of the founding members win, they get a certain amount of money. And if any of the qualifying teams win, they get like a quarter of that amount of money. Yeah. This is not set up to be equal, perhaps to the shock of none. And I think, while there might be decent matches played on the pitch, as we talked about in the show yesterday, the reason that these big matches when they're playing in the Champions League are so exciting is because they've both been earned. And now they're just going to be scheduled all the time, so they'll probably lose a bit of specialness. But also, you have to remember, while all of these teams are unified right now in leaving, there are going to be small boys and big boys in this group of 12, in the eventual group of 15, in the eventual group of 20. Like, this is not... There's even going to be a lack of parity within this entity, which breaking away is its own sense of breaking parity in the sport. So,
but don't you think that's the intention? that essentially is, you know, mm-hmm. if you've got three or four, again, this limited universe clubs, three or four big teams, they need people to play against.
Yeah.
And sort of, you know, us and Arsenal for now are the, you know,
AC Milan, you know, probably as well. But yeah.
Sheffield United of the Super League. Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, right now, I mean, European football, European competition is an open meritocracy, right? And this upends that concept. It just basically takes it and turns it into a closed shop or a virtual closed shop, like an American style sports league, where the value of the franchises is in their scarcity.
Yeah, I totally agree. Curious from your perspective, I've seen probably the main debate of cool-headed people discussing Tottenham's involvement is basically this was going to happen anyway. This is kind of the end point, well, we could only hope, of the financial greed in football, and that if this was already going to happen and there was going to be an inside versus an outside, that it's better that we're in rather than out. How do you feel about that, obviously, as a long-standing Tottenham fan?
I think any Spurs fan tonight, looking at the reports about this, if you look at our situation compared with the vast majority of the other teams involved, you can't even pretend for a second that the criteria for inclusion in this has anything to do with performance. There's nothing
to do with financial performance.
Right, exactly. I mean, this is the logical extension of the Deloitte rich list. Because
mm-hmm.
as soon as that started to be published, that was how people would look at their club and their club's performance. And you're sort of thinking, well, this is bollocks because we haven't won anything for, you know, 13 years. How are we doing this? I know it's. I gotta tell you, part of me still think, and it's still early. I mean, obviously, that everything can change in 24 hours. But you know, part of me still thinks this is a play. This is a play to leverage power with UEFA and get their own way in steering the direction of the Champions League in terms of allocation of resources and that sort of thing. But I think an awful lot would depend on what would happen to what's left. You know, what happens to domestic structures and UEFA competitions, as well as, you know, as we talked about before, I mean, things like national team representation, can existing structures coexist with a brand new structure fitting in within that? I mean, for example, the fact that the ESL clubs so far have said that they want to continue to play in their domestic leagues.
Statement. It's on their site.
I think that might just be like initial cover so they can say they're not actually, quote, breaking away, or, you know, maybe they're hedging their bets in case the TV revenues don't siphon off enough from the domestic coverage, from the existing domestic coverage. But again, you know, from a practical, logistical perspective, you're adding more games, way more games, into an already congested domestic calendar. But the big point is about resources. And surely there's already enough disparity in resources in domestic leagues without the super wealthy clubs bringing those additional resources back from the Super League into domestic competitions, which they already dominate. You know, it's about control. It's about revenues. It's about, you know, and I was talking to somebody last night, actually, about clubs that are now embracing NFTs, for example, as a way mm-hmm. of catering to the fans of the future. I mean, this is just nonsense. You're really moving to a point where competition, the notion of competition, is being replaced by content. This is what they're selling. They're not selling the excitement of football. They're selling your allegiance. The way you demonstrate your allegiance to a particular club, and it's a dangerous road to go down.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it looks like one that we are about to go down. Like you said, I think we all are hoping this is still some kind of power play, but with the kind of official feeling of all of it. As you say, even if they backtrack now, everyone knows what their intent was.
Yes.
Like the mask is well and truly off at this point.
It's out in the open, and they're not. There's no pretense now between fans and customers. We're now just customers, you know.
Yeah, may as well go support Lacoste or Adidas directly rather than the clubs that wear it.
I was thinking actually this morning when I started to read about this. There was a wonderful football-related event in Belfast here last week where the Northern Ireland women's team, the Northern Ireland international women's team, who are all part-timers, you know, that literally the personification of why the game matters, why the game's important, why the game has passion. They beat the Ukraine in Belfast to qualify for next summer's Euro finals. And, you know, that's just the complete anathema to what we were reading about this morning, about this idea that, you know, you're just content. The game that you produce is content. And it has been heading in this direction for a while, Kevin, and you and I have had conversations over beers about this over many, many years. But when it finally sort of hits you that this is where your club is going, I'm not sure I necessarily want to go along for the ride.
Yeah, and I guess we'll kind of end with that general question, which is, if Tottenham are in the ESL and it means that they're not in the Premier League or the Champions League, will you still tune in and watch, or will it kind of sever that years-long relationship?
Of course I'll watch.
Yeah, I know. I think I'm at the same place.
Of course I'll watch, but I'll hate myself for it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like we were talking about with the Carabao Cup. I mean, it's, you know, this should be, going to Wembley should be the high point of any team's season. And yet it feels like an underachievement. Getting to a final feels like a disappointment. And I think it'll feel that way when we're watching, you know, God help us, you know, it doesn't happen, but we're watching Spurs play Juventus for, you know, the third time in 6 months with nothing at stake, with absolutely nothing at stake. Every time the team goes on the field, there has to be something at stake. Otherwise, you lose the soul of football.
Yeah, and it feels like we're dangerously close to that. And as you said earlier, we talked about how football was heading this direction. And I do think that bears some noting that while everybody's really mad about the European Super League, I think what everybody's mad is they can't act under the illusion that this is about the game or about the fans anymore. And it hasn't been for a while. I just think this is the like clearest indication we've had yet that it's just about money. And it, just to loop it back to Tottenham and Levy, like we mentioned at the beginning, this is his version of success. It's not on the pitch. It is the company, Tottenham Hotspur, performing well off of it. And we'll have to come to terms with that at some point. But they do still play on a pitch, whether it's in the European Super League or the Premier League or somehow both, if they can get along, time will tell. But yeah, it's been a rough 24 hours for a Spurs fan, and a word for me, tired. What would you say is your word of the past day?
Yeah, no, it feels that way. I mean, Terry Venables wrote a book a long, long time ago called "They Used to Play on Grass," which was a vision of football in the future, with the idea that there were no fans allowed at games because of hooliganism, and so now we're. We're getting to a ridiculous situation. And I think, just to follow up on what you said, this inevitability, that the road that we're on this, I think you can track that back to when the Champions League opened up from just the European Cup. And effectively finishing fourth was the goal for teams, to especially teams who were not in the upper echelon particularly. So we have a situation now where it was more financially lucrative for teams to actually finish fourth than to go and win the FA Cup or you know, something along. And so the notion of glory, which we talk about a lot as Spurs fans, was replaced by pragmatism, by financial pragmatism, and this is basically where we've ended up.
Yeah, this is the end result of that. All right, we'll see if we could talk forever both about Tottenham, the Mourinho era, ESL, etc. But, you know, we'll just have to hang our hats on the cup final and see how all of these massive footballing organizations, none of which are particularly morally stronger than any of the others, decide what the fate of football at large is. But thanks so much for joining me today. If you'd like to tell folks where they can find you or anything you're working on, now would be a good time.
Well, thanks very much for having me back, Kevin. It was a great conversation, although I'm really sad we were having it. You can get me at Steve McGookin on Twitter, or if you want to follow some of my non-football writing, you can get me at northernslant.com.
Yeah, and I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. You can find me on Twitter at Kevroff. You can find the show at EPL Roundtable, both on Twitter and on all of the podcasting sites. Also, if you want to hear a longer conversation about the ESL and what it could mean for the Premier League at large, be sure to listen to our EPL Roundtable episode from yesterday. Football world all up in the air, and we'll try to keep tabs on it, as you said earlier, as the cards continue to fall. But thanks so much for coming on, Steve. It was a pleasure as always, and folks at home, we hope you keep listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.